You're listening to Pod 4 Ham, a podcast that's all about the musical Hamilton, taking it one track at a time. Every episode features different groups of interesting people talking about a single track from the original Broadway cast recording of Hamilton. Visit us online at pod4ham, that's the numeral 4, .com. Follow us on Twitter at pod4ham, or you can visit The Incomparable at theincomparable.com. Welcome back to Pod 4 Ham, an incomparable podcast. I'm Brian Hamilton.
I'm Michael B. Johnson.
I'm Elsa S. Henry.
I'm Rachel Donner.
What we're talking about this week is Aaron Burr, Sir, the second track on the Hamilton soundtrack and the first real quote-unquote track actually launching into the story. I'll admit, any album with an intro song, any sort of overture intro, like lead into like the first real song, always throws me off. So listening to this, I think, okay, we're actually in the thick of it now.
Yeah, this was an interesting one for me because we may want to sort of go around the room for everybody here in terms of, so I'm seeing the show hopefully a week from tomorrow, but I've obviously listened to the soundtrack lots of times and I read the book. So maybe we can go around and tell each other what our status is on that.
Ooh.
Because I think it's relevant to this one, especially since there's a bunch of historical stuff in it.
Well, I've also read the part of the book. I'm still working my way through it, but I am a historian. That's my background. I did early American history in my undergraduate years, and then I did some of that in graduate. I haven't seen the show yet. I've been trying to make my way into a lottery seat for about 4 months now.
Wow.
I'm visually impaired, so I can't really see the show from anywhere but the front row.
Oh, wow.
So, come on, lottery. So that's, you may see me at the show, Michael, if I'm lucky.
I have not read the book yet. And I've not seen the show, even though, like you, also, I've been doing the lottery for as long as I've been living in New York. So here's hoping at some point we'll all get to see the show if we haven't already.
Okay, so that was the reason I asked was because I read the book and I had listened to the album first, and the whole punching the bursar thing, I still can't find it in the book. So given that it's such a specific, funny line, I'm assuming there's actually some sort of story there, but I assume it came in from some other source versus the Chernow book.
So I'm sure. I mean, I also have to admit, having been an academic, the idea of punching the bursar just amuses me.
I imagine Lin-Manuel Miranda at this point not figuring out any more things that can rhyme with sir, even though he finds so many more, and just needed one little thing to throw into this moment and decide, you know what? Bursar. That sounds like bursar. Let's throw that in there. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, no, I can believe that. Yeah, it's the whole Sondheim thing, right, of like having his whole rhyming books all over his house. The other thing, though, regarding the book, and I actually looked it up today, and that is the fact of him saying, "I wish there were a war," and that's in a letter that Hamilton wrote. He ends it with saying, "I wish there were a war," which I just find kind of mind-boggling.
Later on, he mentions in I believe it's Right Hand Man that he knows that this is kind of a weird thing to wish for a war so that he could rise up and make something of himself like he tries to do this whole show. And it always struck me that like this is definitely something out of the 18th century that you would never really see now. Like there's so many other ways to rise up in the same way that Hamilton wants to, that you don't really need a war at this point for this kind of thing. So when he says that, it's always a little jarring, and it's always cool, like even though they do so much stuff to remove the all the distance between the 18th century and today, that's still like a weird sensibility that not many people understand. So hearing him say that, and especially the fact that it's based in historical letters that he's written that Miranda found, that's incredible.
Right.
What else? This song is, again, like the first actual song launching into the thing. And we see the establishment of so many different motifs throughout the show. And this show is so based in motifs that we get, you know, the chorus chanting the year whenever there's a big leap in time. We get 1776 New York City. And that's always something that gives me a little chuckle as a Broadway nerd that, yeah, you kind of have to do that at this point.
Hmm.
It's very Les Mis of them.
Yes. So when they say the year, the 1776 in the choir, it does compare to Les Mis. However, in Les Mis, they just put it on the proscenium and project it like a super title as opposed to actually saying it.
Did they do that in the show when you saw it?
They don't show the year. They just sing the year.
Mm. There you go. You're the lucky one of us that has actually seen the show. So we're probably going to be asking you a lot of questions during this recording. What else? We get the establishment of Aaron Burr, sir, a lot. And that's his motif throughout the show. Almost every single time there's some sort of conversation between them. They managed to rhyme many, 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 many things with Aaron Burr, sir. And it's a joy to listen to. Lin-Manuel Miranda is a genius in that respect.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I have to say this was my favorite as a guy who sings in the lower register. I loved the whole talk less, smile more. That was the thing that I kind of kept walking around in my brain singing to myself. I realized that was slightly tweaked on the recording there. I'm interested to hear what it sounds like live. But and any comments on that, Rachel?
Yeah, I mean, this song does a really good job of introducing the revolutionary characters in that I think when you listen to the recording, at least from my experience, just listening to the recording, I didn't know who was who and which character was which just on listening. Obviously, if you looked at the lyrics online or something, you could figure that out and then figure out their voices. But just on listen, I couldn't do that. But then seeing it in person, this song actually pops a lot more than it does on the recording because it really highlights each of the characters in the staging. And it also shows Hamilton sort of introducing himself to the other revolutionaries in a very precise way in that he has the initial conversation with Aaron Burr, but then when it kind of goes into the tavern and Hamilton acts as an observer and kind of watches the other three do their thing and kind of takes Burr's advice of the talk less, smile more. Even though you don't think he does, and in reality he doesn't, but he does seem to up front because he just lets the other three have their little moments in the sun and then comes back into the end and kind of immediately establishes himself as the leader of this group with the kind of thrown out at the end. If you stand for nothing, Burr, what do you fall for?
Well, I also think it's interesting that this is, you know, very beginning of the show, second song, and we're already establishing the immediate tension between Burr and Hamilton. It's a tension that will inevitably end the show. And that what do you stall for? Why do you not show your heart on your sleeve? That is the tension. And we're already seeing it during the revolution, which I think is great.
Yeah, I thought it was confusing, frankly, for me, of where you have this moment where, you know, Hamilton comes up. He's essentially sort of a supplicant to Burr. He's kind of like, you know, hey, you're this guy who I want to talk to. I've heard about. I want to do what you did. And so that's the front moment of this. And then it immediately cuts over. It feels like Burr is like, look at these idiots over here. This is what you don't want to do. But then at the very end of it, it's immediately, Hamilton's just, he goes right in at Burr. And it just that was a little dissonant for me of, you know, if you stand for nothing, Burr, what will you fall for? He just a minute ago, he was basically asking him for a favor, you know, can I buy you a drink? And it obviously it works, but it was jarring the first couple times I listened to it because I was, Rachel, I think you were the one who said it was hard to tell who was who when you're just listening to it. And again, I mentioned this in one of the other one of the other podcasts that the double casting is definitely confusing when you're just listening to the soundtrack.
I had no idea anybody was double cast until I heard all of these new podcast episodes about the show from The Incomparable, and everyone mentions this double casting. I had no idea whatsoever.
It's really interesting for me. I'm, like I mentioned, I'm visually impaired. I'm also hearing impaired, and so listening to the show has been kind of a long form process for me of learning the lyrics. We didn't have a sort of lyrics write up for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first three times that I listened to the show, I was kind of intently trying to figure out what people were saying. So by this point, it's almost been an internalized learning process for me of figuring out what people sound like. So in certain cases, I didn't know that like Lafayette was double cast because right. The voice changes so much. But for some of them, I figured it was the same person just because they did have to sound so much alike for me to pay that much attention.
Right. The John Lawrence Philip thing, that was really confusing to me until I realized that it was, oh, same actor playing two different parts. One of them is a child or then a teenage, you know, 20 something. But yeah, I'm totally with you. And I frankly, I am in theory not hearing impaired, and I it took me certainly more than three before I had three listens before I was even beginning to parse the stuff. This is more so than most soundtracks that I've listened to. This one was pretty challenging.
I do want to acknowledge my favorite moment in Aaron Burr, sir, which is the Showtime line. For those of us who live in New York City, that's a pretty common occurrence on the subway.
Oh, yes.
And it made me really happy that that gets encapsulated in this moment.
For those of us who don't live in New York, can you explain that?
Yeah. So if you're, let's say you're on the 6 train, you're going uptown and it's quiet uptown, supposedly, except that on this train car, it's not. Because a group of people have gotten onto the train and they are now going to rap for you in the middle of the train car. And that is how every single group tends to start, is with its showtime.
Sometimes they're pole dancing, but usually they do that little intro.
Pole dancing would be terrifying.
Especially when they're trying to do hip hop on the bars on the inside of the subway.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And flipping?
It's gotten to the point where I see ads saying the poles in the car are not for your latest routine. They're for holding. And that's like an official MTA, you know, safety thing they're posting up.
Wow.
So I like that he kind of incorporates that within the script.
Yeah.
Going back to some of the confusion we felt in being able to parse out all the different characters during their lines, the fact remains that this song, Aaron Burr, Sir, is not listed in the Broadway playbill. It goes from Alexander Hamilton to My Shot, and I saw a list of it today. It's cut down by maybe half because this song is, what, maybe 2 minutes long, and this is, you know, the equivalent of a dialogue scene in any other play. We're listening in to this completely sung dialogue that, you know, according to the producers of the play, isn't even worth putting into the playbill with its own, this is a song we're going to be doing. Otherwise, it would be a 2-page long thing for each of the, for a list of the numbers that they're going to do that night. And no other play really does that. No other musical really does that. Les Mis does to an extent, and that's another thing that's entirely sung like this. So it's weird that, you know, here we are essentially listening to what could be considered a bootleg of the actual, like, dialogue performance and not just listening to the music. And I think that, you know, that definitely plays into a lot of the confusion we felt in not being able to parse who says what, because this is essentially a dialogue scene.
Yeah. So two other things come to mind with regards, I forget who said it, but someone was talking about, you know, the lyrics or the context are more contemporary for people. Pretty sure Sam Adams was not brewing beer yet that was going in the yeah, I think that was a whole, he was my third cousin removed and I want to do a beer in Boston, but maybe he was a brewer, Ben, but the whole 2 pints of Sam Adams, I'm working on 3. And the other one was, was Princeton King's College and Columbia was Queens College or the other way around?
Columbia was King's College and Princeton was Queens College.
Okay, so it was Queens College, it wasn't Princeton. And so there, I heard your name at Princeton is another one of kind of people today would recognize Princeton, they wouldn't necessarily recognize Queens College.
Mm-hmm. People will recognize Columbia as King's College, though, because it tends to be presented as Columbia / King's College, which I think is an interesting...
Well, some people, I lived in New York for 10 years. I never heard Columbia called King's College, but I heard of Columbia, so...
I applied there, and it's on their paperwork. That's the difference, I think.
There you go.
There you go, yeah.
They didn't take me.
I think we would also be remiss if we didn't talk about the nature of the rap and hip hop in this song. And while I'm not an expert, I do enjoy hip hop and rap, and definitely caught on to the Kanye reference in here. And once I read about the Tupac lyric reference, I was reminded of it. But this song came off to me as kind of reminiscent of Beastie Boys' License to Ill, because it is simplistic on the surface. And these rhymes are a little bit slower, a little bit more methodical than the ones later in the show, as Lin-Manuel Miranda kind of builds the complexity of Hamilton, the character, through the show, and Aaron Burr, the character, through the show. But I feel like this is reminiscent of that album, because it seems so simple, and yet there's so much going on there. And the lyrics have so much work to do to introduce all these characters, and it seems effortless.
It does seem effortless. I agree with that. In other places in the show, everything feels more complicated, and this feels very conversational to me.
I'm actually going to disagree. My only gripe with this song, and I know this is a big thing in hip-hop culture, but it always feels awkward to me, is the kind of introduction to yourself. Every time I hear Lawrence or Hercules, or I guess Lafayette, but he says Je m'appelle instead of I am, it's like... It takes me out of it in that this feels like economy of songwriting, where you just need to introduce these characters. So what's the best way to do it? Say who they are in a rap, and I get that. And it's reprised later, like Mulligan and Lafayette each get their own little rap monologues where they talk about who they are, what they're doing during the Battle of Yorktown and things like that. And it always, I don't know, it's... not my favorite thing in the world. Like the Steven Universe opening title song does the exact same thing, where they introduce the characters with like a big thing of their names. And it always bothers me in terms of, you know, it seems like a slightly lazy way to introduce a character to me. But that's my only gripe with this song.
Well, there's, you know, it's the expositional trick of, you know, show, don't tell. But in this particular case, since it's a, you know, there is a precedent in hip hop for that sort of, let me explain to you who I am. I think it makes sense.
Yeah, I think it fits.
Mm-hmm.
It fits perfectly. And especially with, they are literally introducing themselves at this moment in the show. So it just flows perfectly. And it allows Hamilton to kind of observe and get a feeling for each of these three other guys. And then he figures out how to kind of take over the pod and become their leader based on how they introduce themselves.
Right. I do like the fact that they each have their own little introduction, and then Hamilton steals the show with one half of a verse to Burr.
Yeah, right. And that's what made me think of the Beastie Boys, is because there was three of them, and there were three of these other guys, and they have a slightly different tone and a slightly different cadence to their voice, and yet it all blends together perfectly.
In the show, Rachel, are they beatboxing live? Are they doing that for themselves? Like when they trade off the verses at the end, are they actually beatboxing like that for themselves, or is that somebody in the pit doing that?
Oh, I don't remember that specifically. I think it was a combination of both, that they kind of were staged beatboxing, but maybe the actual sounds were coming from the pit. I do know it was part of the recording.
Mm-hmm.
In the Genius Notes, it does mention that Questlove did the table tapping. and so that's kind of what they're doing. But as far as how the sound mix worked live, I'm not exactly sure how they did that.
Okay, so can someone explain a lyric to me?
Because
I will pop, chicka pop these cops till I'm free.
So that's actually the Tupac reference.
Oh, is it?
Yes. There's a song, Soldier Like Me, where he talks about popping at the cops.
I see.
But it does make sense here.
Yeah, I just, the pop, chicka pop. I just was, you know.
Yeah.
I'm the old white guy, so what can I say?
I'm the young white guy, and I didn't catch any Kanye references either. Can someone tell me what that was?
About, like, party people. This is the place to be.
Oh, there we go. I feel like an idiot for not getting that.
There was one more thing I had in my notes that Hercules Mulligan really stood out to me seeing it in person, even more so. I mean, I feel like he has sort of the strongest tone in his voice in the recording, but then just seeing him in person just made it stand out even more. And in fact, seeing it live, I was like, this guy is a combination between Missy Elliott and DMX.
That's awesome.
Well, it's interesting because in the book, he's not a big character. They do make a point of talking about that when the war was over, George Washington made a point of visiting a bunch of people who had essentially been working secretly on their side, and one of those being Hercules Mulligan. And there's sort of a list of people that Washington goes and visits. The point being, you know, the great General Washington is coming to thank you for your service, and your neighbors who might have thought, oh, you were, you know, why were you being a tailor to all of these British soldiers and stuff? And now suddenly people are like, oh, I get it. That's why. But it's, I thought that was pretty interesting that just the name, it felt like Lin-Manuel Miranda sort of picked, you know, one of several characters that he could have, and partly based on the name, and then, you know, it, not doing anything not true, but just, you know, you could have picked any of 15 different real people and kind of elevated them to be a character in that context there. But he was one of Hamilton's friends, but, I just love that name.
I don't know. He's also kind of a neat guy. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of history about him that is interesting, given that he was a spy. And so I feel like there is also good historical reasons to pick him out in that context.
It's almost like Game of Thrones adapting the books into the TV show. You kind of have to take these kinds of liberties, except Lin-Manuel Miranda is doing it with real life and real history.
Well, part of what was interesting in the book was that, I guess the point was, is that in the book, and again, I don't know that that time in history that much, other than stuff I read 30 years ago and now rereading a little bit now. But what was interesting was that in the book, he quotes Hercules Mulligan a lot. There's a lot of, you know, Hercules Mulligan recalled that, you know, such and such. And so clearly someone interviewed him at the time, or he wrote something up. I'm not quite sure, you know, like even I'm just sort of looking at the book here. There's the morning after he entered New York, Washington breakfasted with the loquacious tailor Hercules Mulligan. so loquacious, I'm assuming he gave a lot of interviews or something after the fact. But anyway, I thought it was interesting because it's such a character in a musical theater piece that you assume to some degree that it's made up. And then you're like, oh, actually, he was a historical figure. Interesting.
It's such a cool name.
Yeah, it is.
Hercules Mulligan, yes. And he was a sub-agent of the Culper Ring in New York City, which was one of the spy rings during the Revolutionary War.
Cool.
I think it actually is the spy ring that's covered in the TV show Turn, but I'm not sure because I haven't seen it.
And then, Aaron Burr ends with crescendo up to the very end and then leads immediately into My Shot. Tune in next week on Pod for Ham for more on My Shot.
Good luck with that. You're taking a stand. You spit, I'ma sit. We'll see where we land.
Bro, the revolution's imminent. What do you stall for?
If you stand for nothing, Burr, what'll you fall for?